Cars today are built to last, but how they look is up to you, and that's where Maaco comes in. They specialize in cosmetic repairs. Let's say it's affordable paint jobs to fixing those annoying dents and dings. Whatever it is, Maaco has you covered. With more Americans keeping their cars longer, now's the time to protect your investment and keep it looking sharp for years. Get started. Visit your local Maaco today. Get the free estimate and see how easy it is to bring new life to your ride. Uh-oh, better get Maaco.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai. Kosai.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Hi, it's Tony Bruschi from Real Ghost Stories Online, inviting you to subscribe to our other podcast called The Grave Talks. It's where I sit down and interview individuals who've had extreme paranormal situations happen to them in their lives. Just search The Grave Talks on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you download podcasts. Be sure to press subscribe and give us some stars to help spread the word that this show exists. Now, here's a 15-minute preview of The Grave Talks. Today on The Grave Talks, Haunted Chicago. Chicago. Just saying the word conjures up various emotions and reactions from people, depending on the connection that you have to the city. For many, it's a city of life, a sprawling metropolis packed to the gills with people of every race, background, origin, and story. It's a city known for its good, just as much as it's known for its bad. It is undoubtedly a city with its ghosts. Chicago is haunted by the spirits of thousands who came before us, the energy of their struggles, their joys, and their lives, still on display in many ways all around the city. On today's episode of The Grave Talks, we talk with John Kashuba, author of Ghost Hunting Illinois. We learn the many spirits that haunt the multiple neighborhoods around Chicago.
Well, I've always been interested in the paranormal, and I grew up in Connecticut, where you hear all these old stories from history and you hear legends and everything else. I've always been interested in that. And early on, I had a chance to meet Ed and Lorraine Warren, who, you know, your audience would probably know. I call them America's godfather and godmother of ghost hunting.
Sure.
But, you know, they're the ones that did the Amityville Horror back in the 70s, mm-hmm. or whenever that was. I don't even remember
yep.
anymore. But, you know, they've done hundreds and hundreds of investigations around the country. So I had a chance to meet them based on a location in Connecticut that we had both sort of investigated separately without knowing, you know, each other were doing it. And I contacted them because I had some questions about the photos I took there, in which I was seeing what looked like faces appearing in sort of the old cellar holes, basement foundations that were still at this settlement. So they basically were very, you know, kind about helping me. Anyway, they just sort of increased my interest more, and I started thinking about writing about these places, but never really did until I moved out to Ohio. And an editor friend of mine just said, "Hey, you know, you've got a lot of interesting stories here. You ought to write something for us." So that's how this series called America's Haunted Road Trip began. I did the first two books in the series for Ohio and Illinois, and then I also edited several other state books with working with writers in various states. So there's quite a few different states there. But that's how it started. I've always been interested in it, and even when I look at other things that I've written, like short stories or novels that essentially aren't really paranormal, it seems like they're always somewhere in there is a ghost. So they're haunting my work, I guess is what it is, you know.
When you first started writing about the ghost experiences that you had and the stories that that would go into the books, what was your understanding at the time of the paranormal? I mean, and how has that evolved through your experiences?
I didn't really have an understanding of the paranormal as sort of a cult industry like it is today with TV shows and magazines and, well, you know, websites and everything else, right? I mean, it's extremely popular today. When I went into it, I did this solely as a journalist. I went in with a completely objective viewpoint. I didn't say ghosts existed. I didn't say they weren't, you know, where I wasn't trying to debunk anything and I wasn't trying to prove anything. I was simply going to locations that had a reported history of haunting, and I would go there and I'd spend as much time as I could there, and I would talk to the people that are there more often, you know, the staff. If it's a hotel, for instance, a haunted hotel, you know, I would talk to the wait staff, the desk clerk, the security guards, the parking attendant, you know, anybody, and I would get their stories. And so I'd record all that, and I'd record anything that happened to me. But I didn't have any, as I said, I didn't have any sort of hidden agenda here. I was simply interested in hearing these stories and reporting on them. And then, you know, later on, as this developed, as my own work developed, I started working more with various paranormal ghost hunting teams, if you will, you know, all around the country. They would contact me and say, you know, we heard about what you're doing and would you like to join us on a hunt or something? And so I would. So I got more, I guess, involved in what you would call sort of the celebrity aspect of it in a way, you know, and I did some TV and radio and things like that too, based on kind of that. But my whole objective, and my objective still today, is to report on these things as objectively as possible. So to give you an example, I don't own any of the fancy equipment that you see on television with all the different ghost hunting groups. You know, I have a simple camera. I have a simple voice recorder, and dowsing rods, and me. And that's about it. Now, you know, some of the groups that I go with obviously will have steamer trunks full of all kinds of equipment. And that's fine. But as I say, I go in pretty much... you know, just me as sort of my own antenna to see what I can pick up and to see what other people tell me about what's going on.
And I want to jump into the conversation about Illinois and several of the locations that you've put into the book. Before we jump into that, though, mm-hmm. I want to ask you a quick question, and this could have happened anywhere. What was the first experience for you personally where you said, there's something going on here. There's something I can't explain that this is abnormal. This is paranormal. What was that for you?
I don't know if it was the first experience, but it was certainly one of the most dramatic, probably one of the first that made a real impression on me. And that was in Florida. It was at a house. It's now the Hernando County Historical Society Museum, but it's an old house that was owned by a doctor during the Victorian era. And his wife died in the house giving birth to one of their children. The child was a daughter, and she lived till age 3. And then she succumbed to something. It was either yellow fever or, you know, one of the more common, maybe cholera, one of the common sort of diseases back in the 19th century that, you know, especially was fatal for a lot of either elderly people or children. And so the tragedy there is that, you know, this little 3-year-old girl died. So this place was supposed to be haunted by her, as well as they were seeing the ghost of a soldier there. And one of the things that would happen is, the people that would work in the Historical Society would come in the morning. They had these old Victorian toys, like these cast iron toys, and they had them in a sort of display cabinet, a curio cabinet. And they would be put there nicely, and that's where they were, in the cabinet. And if you visited, you'd see them in the cabinet. They would come back in the morning, and they'd find the cabinet open, and they'd find these toys scattered all around the house. They also had a doll that was in a cradle, And they came in one morning and the cradle had been sort of taken apart and was moved in a different room and the doll was laying somewhere by it. So they were thinking that this little girl, and for the life of me, I cannot remember what her name was, but they were saying that she was, you know, playing with her toys and she would leave them like little kids do and they'd have to go pick up after her. So they asked me to come in and do an investigation there. And I was there overnight with another ghost hunter from a Tampa group. Hernando County is near Tampa. It was myself, him, and the supervisor at this home, at this museum. The three of us were there all night long. And the first thing I noticed when I went inside was that as soon as we closed the door in this place, it was quiet. Well, yeah, okay, of course it was quiet. It was overnight. There was only three of us there. But I mean, it was a weird quiet. It was a, it's hard to describe it, but it was a very unusual quietness. Right across the street from this place was a biker bar. And if you open the door, you know, there's lights flashing over there, neon lights, and there's all this noise. There's bikes going up and down the street and everything else. And as soon as you close the door, it was like you were sealing yourself into a vacuum. So that was the first thing I noticed, and actually the other two did too, that they were saying, this is really abnormally quiet. It was a very, very strange atmosphere. But we sat there all night long. We went into the various rooms, we went up into the attic, and we'd sit there and quiet for a while and see if there was anything that would react with us, and nothing happened. So at about 3 o'clock in the morning, we decided, you know, this is a bust. Nothing's going on. And the supervisor was all apologetic. She said, I can't believe this. We have action here all the time. There's always activity. Now I invite you here, nothing happens. So we decided, okay, that's it. We're going to leave. So this place had an alarm system. So I set all the alarms, and then we had to leave through the rear exit, which is through a kitchen. And the kitchen was set up, again, in Victorian era style. So there was, you know, there were different kinds of appliances and cabinetry and all from that time. And one thing, there was a wood-burning stove that was in the room, sort of by the door. And if you've ever seen a wood-burning stove, this one, it's an old-fashioned one. So it was like a big cast iron, almost like a potbelly stove. But the top was flat, and it had a round metal plate on the top of it with an eye bolt. And attached to that eye bolt was a iron rod, probably 18 inches long, and it probably weighed about 10 ounces or something like that, half a pound to 10 ounces. It was this pretty solid iron rod. And what you would do is that furnace would get really hot, so you couldn't touch it, but you would grab this rod, you'd lift up that plate, and you'd throw more wood in, and then you'd slam it down again. So that was function. And the rod was laying completely across the surface of the stove. As we walked by, the three of us walked by, we had one flashlight. And as we're walking by, we notice in our peripheral vision of the flashlight, we can see that this rod suddenly rises up and it flips over. So this is an 18-inch metal rod that rises up on its own, and it flips over, does a 180, and it slams itself down on the top of that lid. It goes bam. And it hits so hard that it actually popped off the eye bolt that was attached to and fell on the floor. So the three of us sat there and we stood there and we said, holy cow. Which is typically what you say when you see something like that, because we were totally stunned by this. Here we had put everything away, cameras were away, everything was done, we're walking out, everything, all our instrumentation is packed up, and that thing happens just by the back door as we're about to leave. And it was, you know, we stopped there and we picked that rod up and we played around with it. We said, is there any way that we could have moved that or somehow knocked it over? There was nothing. So it defied all the laws of physics. You know, when you see something like that, it's completely unexplainable by any natural law that we know of today.
Sure.
So that's a paranormal means, right? Something mm-hmm. out of the normal, something that cannot be accounted for. So that was, I would say, probably my first significant paranormal event. I mean, I certainly will remember that.
Let's jump over to Illinois, and let's first tackle talking about Chicago. There's several pieces of Chicago that I know I have some questions about. But before I get to those, I'd love for you just to kind of tell me, you know, when you began looking into the city of Chicago. Obviously, there are so many hauntings there. But of what you've researched and what you studied about, what are some of them that really stood out to you? What to you was the one that you just go, this is quite an amazing story? I know they all are somewhat, but to you personally, what one spoke to you the most?
Yeah, I think, well, first of all, I need to back up before I even go into what I saw or the experiences that I had or the places I went to talk briefly about the East Lake disaster.
Okay.
Because this happened in Chicago in 1915.
Yeah.
And basically it was a steamer that was at a pier in the Chicago River, less than 20 feet of water, within, you know, walking distance, attached to sidewalks and everything else. And it was being loaded up for an outing by a company. They were going to take all these people out to some island. They were going to have a nice, you know, kind of outing in the summer. This is 1915. And for whatever reason, and it's still, I think, kind of unknown, as people are getting on the ship, the steamer started listing to one side. And they tried to right it by changing the ballast, shifting it over, and so it started listening to the other side. They couldn't get it right, and before you know it, this ship, just literally lays over on its side in the Chicago River. Now, it was loaded with people. Over 1,000 people were on this ship. And they couldn't get out. Many of them were below deck, trapped below deck. And again, this is like the early 1900s, 1915. So, you know, women are wearing these, you know, long dresses and heavy clothes and shoes, and the men are wearing suits and all this kind of stuff. Not easy things to, you know, get out of when you're in water. But this is 20 feet of water, which is really nothing when you think about it. But 844 people drowned in that event. 22 entire families wiped out. It was an amazing event, and here it happens right in downtown Chicago. You know, not on the ocean. It wasn't that Titanic. In a sunny day, right at its pier on the Chicago River. It took a while to extricate all the bodies. Police and rescue workers had to cut through the hull and everything else, the exposed side, and literally drag people out. But they took them to what was then a National Guard armory. And today, that armory is part of Oprah Winfrey's Harpo Studios.
I hope you enjoyed your 15-minute preview of our new podcast, The Grave Talks. Be sure to subscribe to it on Apple Podcasts or wherever you download podcasts to not miss any episode of the show. New episodes every single Monday. Just search for The Grave Talks. And then press subscribe. Give us a review while you're at it and some stars that will help us grow in the rankings and let other folks know that the show exists to make an even better show for you. The Grave Talks. Check it out at thegravetalks.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.